recorded live.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Talking Twilight Zone.
I meant what I said the last time, Seth.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did. We can't keep seeing each other.
I should never let it have gotten started in the first place.
Sure. As long as you're the saintly social worker and I'm one of the crumbs, everything's all right. But as soon as we get too close, why, then you notice I got dirt on my hands.
That has nothing to do with it.
And that I don't talk like your old man.
Sal, we're just two people who are never going to understand each other.
Maybe. With your education, you can come up with a better Dear John than that.
I'm sorry.
Waiting for, and my time was running wild, a million dead end streets. And every time I thought I got it made, it seemed the taste was not so sweet. So I turned myself to face me. But I've never caught a glimpse of how the others must see the faker. I'm much too fast to take that test.
Changes.
Turn and face the strain.
Changes.
Don't wanna be a richer man.
Changes.
Turn and face the strain.
Changes.
It's gonna have to be a different man. Time may change me, but I can't trace time.
Yeah, it's youth. That's what I want to sell you.
Youth that comes and... Come on, get out.
Now, wait a minute. Look, I read in a paper that you're 72 years old, right? I'm 26. Now, what would you give to be 26 years old again?
I think you're the kookiest kid they ever turned loose in the streets.
Okay, you think what you want to think, but you just listen to me, will you? I mean, it's not going to hurt anything. Now, come on. How much would you give to be 26 years old again? How much? Well, come on, how much? $1 million?
All right, let's say $1 million.
And what about this pad? You own it?
Yes, I own it.
Did you throw that in as part of the deal?
How do you propose to deliver these years you rave about?
I'm going to sell you my years. Come in.
Here are the evening papers you ordered, sir.
Come in. Shut the door. Come all the way in. Let me have a look at you.
You're the new owner. I was wondering why I hadn't seen you.
Well, I've been staying in.
White lace and feathers, they made up his bed. A gold-covered mattress on which he was led.
Ooh, what a lucky man he was. Ooh, what a lucky man he was.
I've worked so hard at improving myself that even your father can't object to you going out with me. Can you, Mr. Maitland?
Would you mind, Dad?
Rhea, you know I've never tried to tell you what to do.
I won't stay out late. And I would like to hear about everything that's been happening to you. Just give me a couple of minutes to change.
I am moody, messy, I get restless, and it sounds less. I never seem to care. When I'm angry, you listen, make me happy, submission. And you won't stop till I'm there. Fall, sometimes I fall so fast. When I hit that bottom crash, you're all I have. Oh, seems like I can finally rest my head on something real. I
You open this door with the click of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination. And you're invited along. We'll be talking Twilight Zone.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. It's Talking Twilight Zone. I'm your host, Lynn, and I'm here with my co-hosts, Robert and Bobby. And Dave will be back very shortly. He's having some technical difficulties, but he will be back soon. And we were just talking about how we're having some awful weather. Yes, we're having rainy days here in Pennsylvania, and Robert's having some rainy days there.
Let's go live to Ollie Williams with the weather report. Ollie?
It's raining sideways.
Sounds rough, Ollie. Do you have an umbrella?
Had one.
Where is it?
Inside out, 2 miles away.
Is there anything we can do for you?
Bring me some soup.
What kind?
Turkey.
All right, we'll get on that.
In Ohio, and Dave was having some rainy days this past week. But that won't hurt our show any, because we're still going to have a great show today. Today's episode is called The Self-Improvement of Salvador Ross.
And now, Mr. Serling.
Confidential personnel file on Salvador Ross. Personality, a volatile mixture of fury and frustration. Distinguishing physical characteristic, a badly broken hand, which will require emergency treatment at the nearest hospital. Ambition, shows great determination towards self-improvement. Estimate of potential success, a sure bet for a listing in Who's Who in the Twilight Zone.
Salvador Ross, oh my, he's a brash, insensitive, ambitious young man, and he craves the lovely young social worker named Leah Maitland. And Leah, she's attracted to Ross, but she could never marry him because he's so lacking compassion. He's not a very, very sensitive, nice guy. And she tells him the relationship's finished. She slams the door in his face, and then Ross slams his fist into the door. You know what happens? He breaks his hand. So that
womp,
means...
Womp, 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 womp.
Womp, womp. Yeah. And that means he's got to take a trip to the hospital. So his roommate, Salvador Ross's roommate in the hospital, is this elderly man, and he has a respiratory infection. So Ross very sarcastically suggested he'd like to trade places with the old man. He'd like to trade ailments. And the old man, he takes it as a joke. He says, oh, sure, I'll trade places with you. Well, the next morning, as if by magic, the old man has a broken hand and Ross has a cold. Well, Ross comes to realize that he has this supernatural power to make magical trades with other people. So in exchange for a large amount of cash and a penthouse apartment, Salvador Ross sells his youth to an elderly millionaire. As a result, Ross is now very rich, but also very old. So he finds an easy way to regain his youth. He offers a large number of young men, starting with the hotel bellboy, a small amount of cash for just 1 year of their lives. Well, the boys accept the money, thinking the guy's just crazy, and since none of them feels any different after aging just 1 year, none thinks anything has really happened. So in short order, Ross is young again, but he's still rich. So with his newfound wealth, he attempts to win Leah's hand again, and again she turns him down. She wants a man with a heart, man with compassion, who's generous and as compassionate as her father. And her father's a very compassionate man. So Salvador, he's very frustrated, so he goes to Leah's father, Mr. Maitland, and of course Mr. Maitland is not so crazy about Salvador and does not think he'd make a good husband for Leah. But Ross offers to make him financially secure for the rest of his life. The father says, how are you going to do that? And Salvador says, well, it's kind of hard to explain. And then sometime later, we see that Salvador has become a warm, compassionate fellow, and he's won Leah's heart. But in consideration of Mr. Maitland's feelings. He meets with him in private and asks for his acceptance and his consent to the marriage of him to his daughter. And Mr. Maitland refuses. And he says to the father, "Don't you have any compassion?" And the father coldly replies, "I sold that to you yesterday, don't you remember?" And he shoots Salvador Ross dead. So, that's really pretty interesting. I figured, did you ever want something so badly that you would even consider giving up 2 or 3 or even 5 years of your life to get it? I mean, I suppose some people would, but I'm thinking the majority wouldn't. I mean, nobody wants to die, and certainly not any earlier than they have to. For example, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. For example, I'm a short woman, okay? I'm only 4'9". Now, if some higher power offered to make me 4 inches taller in exchange for 4 years of my life, would I do that? Now, I admit it would be tempting. I'd have an easier time buying clothes, reaching for things on the higher supermarket shelves. You know, I wouldn't feel so inferior sometimes in a room full of tall people. That'd be great. But who knows how long I'm going to live? And that would be the problem. If I live to be 99, well, then who cares if I had to die at 95? However, I might only live to be 69. And then those 4 years, they would matter to me.
Well, I mean, that old man in the hospital, Lynn, I don't know what he was complaining about because, you know, Salvador gave him, you know, extra years to live because that cold he had could have turned into pneumonia and he could have died right there at the hospital.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
Just giving him a broken hand, you know, yeah, it may be hard for him to heal from that, but at least he bought him some more time than he would
have
had.
That's right. He's going to live a longer life.
Yep.
Exactly. But I think it all depends on how long you're going to live, you know. I mean, if you're going to die at a young age, yeah, nobody knows when they're going to die. So if mm-hmm. you sell a few years of your life and you die at a young age, then you'd wish you had those years back. If you're going to die at the age of 99, then you don't mind if you sold 4 years of them. It's like, okay, well, 95, it's still a long, good life. But, you know, Salvador Ross, he desperately needed to become a better person to win the love of that woman, Leah. And she doesn't want him because he has no real future, and he is absolutely obnoxious. And her dad wants nothing to do with him. Okay, so then he finds out he has this power to change the situation with that of all these other people. And so in time, he's young and rich, and he pursues Leah again, but no dice. He's still self-centered. He's still an obnoxious creep, and she rejects him again. But then a short time later, he's suddenly a sweetheart who's the man of her dreams. So what happened? He made his final and most deadly deal with Leah's dad by buying his compassion and his kindness from him. And then when he tells the dad that he and Leah are going to get married, dad doesn't accept it, tells Sal, "Hey, I no longer have compassion. I can't stand you," you know, and he blows Sal away. So, see, sometimes it's better to do things on your own, even if it's the hard way. You know, it's a bit ridiculous that Leah believed that Sal was a completely changed man within the course of one day. How could she be sure it wasn't just messing with her mind? Didn't it seem strange to her that such a bastard could turn into a prince in such a short time? And I also couldn't understand why such a sweet and caring man like Leah's dad would sell his compassion to anyone, especially a guy he despised. Now he's going to be heartless and uncaring. You know, so that didn't make sense to me. And I don't know.
You know what, Lynn? That brings up a good question. Since Salvador is killed and die, does that mean all the deals he made revert back to being non void, or are they still permanent? Did the old man get his compassion back but still has to go to prison for murder?
Yeah, see, that's weird. That's now, thing. You never really catch that. They don't even tell you that at the end. It kind of leaves that open-ended, you know.
Yeah, did he have to be alive in order for the stuff to still? Did the younger guy that got his years convert back to the old man again? The one in the apartment?
That's right.
So
it's kind of open-ended there because you don't know how everybody else turned out. Yeah, and also, another thing that kind of made me a little crazy then is why didn't Leah come running out screaming when she heard the gunshot? I mean, she wasn't deaf. She was easily manipulated, but she wasn't deaf. I mean, her father shoots Sal. She only went back to the bedroom to pack, and she never even comes out. So, you know, that's kind of a little crazy there. But
made for a more dramatic look with the camera panning back with Salvador on the floor, dead.
Exactly. Yeah, I guess you couldn't have her. Cause same thing happened in Walter Jameson when mm-hmm. The woman shot Walter Jameson and the daughter never came back in. Yeah, but you know, Don Gordon's character. I thought he played his character well. I really did. And you know, he also got blown away by his own dad at the end of season one, the four of us are dying. So this guy can't catch a break. He gets blown away in every episode he's in. But you know, I thought the acting was fairly good in this one. And one other thing. Did anyone notice that Rod Serling isn't holding a cigarette during his opening narration?
Mm.
He's holding a pair of sunglasses. That's the first.
Yeah, he was ready to go on vacation there. Say, okay,
go.
Rod, go ahead and stand over here for the next week. Then we'll go ahead and put you over here, and then you can go on your vacation there. So, I can imagine him driving off in the car, putting the sunglasses on.
Exactly. To try to look cool there, you know. But, you know, all things considered, I give this a 2. I did think it was a great episode.
Would have been a great ending, Lynn. You know what? Okay, imagine him on the floor, right? Then we go to the next scene, Rod getting in his car and driving away. And then you hear his voiceover as he's driving away from the apartment. That would have been great.
That would have been very cool. That would have been, especially for this episode. All things considered, I give it a 2. It's average. It's not great. It's not terrible. But, you know, I'm going to give it a 2 rating. I thought the acting was very good. But too many open ends and kind of some unanswered questions, such as the one you brought up. But I'm going to turn it over to you. Dave, are you back in? I guess you're not, huh?
Yeah, I think so.
Here he is. All right.
That phone call that broke my connection or something. Anyway,
That's okay. I'm glad you're back. Okay, Robert, over to you.
Okay, thank you, Lynn. Yeah, pretty much the way I feel about this whole episode is I wish I could exchange this episode for another. I mean, it's all just about Salvador being unlikable to start with and then making him likable at the end. It just didn't work. You know, I look at this character as a paint-by-number character. You remember the old paint-by-number? I think they're still around, too, where
we all
had
them.
Different numbers, and then the colors coordinated with the numbers on the paint board.
2 was red, and 4 was blue, and 7 was yellow. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This is what I looked at his character as. I looked at it as a paint-by-number. I mean, you have you paint your canvas, you have your number paints, you know, let's say I pick 42 to, you know, maybe that's the flesh tone color you need for his picture. But instead of using number 42, I use number 18. And, you know, maybe I use number 20 for the hands. And, you know, by the end, exchanging numbers, the painting looks like a piece of crap pretty much, to be honest about it. I mean, even with all these improvements and changes that Salvador goes through, he's still the same person inside. You can't change who you are. I mean, you know, people try to prove themselves by plastic surgery, reading books, you know, seeking advice from others. But in the end, like I said, you're still just the same person you were before. What I can't understand is the justification of Leah's father shooting Salvador at the end. I feel it was uncalled for when he bought his compassion, the father's compassion. I mean, did the father lose his intelligence as well? I mean, come on. Was he going to prison for the rest of your life? Or the death sentence for killing him. And the question is, why couldn't he buy a part of his compassion? Remember the scene where he got old and he bought the guys, he gave his years up and asked for $1 million, which I think is another stupid thing. I would ask more of $1 million, but, and in the apartment. And then when the, I guess the bellboy came in, dropped his paper off, he was making him an offer for years of his life, and the kid didn't want to give it up, but he was willing to give a year up. So he passed the word out to whoever wanted to give a year of life up, he'd give $1,000. There he got his youth back again. Why couldn't he ask for partial? I mean, you know, if he could do that with age and make himself back to where he previously was by, you know, at $1,000 a pop a year, get himself back to where he was. Did he really have to take all of Leah's father's compassion? Here, you know, I give you $10,000 for part of your compassion.
Yeah.
I didn't understand that.
I just didn't understand why the guy would sell his compassion at all. I mean, why just, first of all, he didn't like the guy. So why give him anything? Just tell him to hit the brick.
No. He sold his compassion because he was compassionate.
Yeah, but he felt
compassion.
Could...
He didn't think the deal was going to happen. He probably thought this lad was having a mental breakdown. He probably consented to it, thinking, you know, this is a fool and his money has soon parted. He didn't know all the other stories that we knew that what happened. He probably, you know, thought, well, if this is an idiot, thank goodness he's not marrying my daughter, and I'll take the $100,000. Thank you very much.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, I agree with you, Dave. You're saying to me here that $1 million was worth a lot then. Yeah, that's true. But I imagine this old man that lived in an apartment was worth more than $1 million. I mean, if you're going to give up your youth, you know, I would give it up for more. I mean, I would go for $5 or $10 million, be honest, be comfortable.
But as you said, he bought it back at $1,000 a year, so it only cost him $50,000 to buy back his £1 million worth of years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was rather smart myself.
Because nobody wanted to, well, first of all, nobody really believed them. So.
Well, they would after a bit. You saw anyway, I'll wait till my turn. Sorry to interrupt.
No, that's okay. Yeah, I agree. It just, this episode is just so freaking weird. It's unbelievable. You can tell that I was kind of a little bored with it by it, because usually I fast forward, which I did with this one too. I just kind of fast forward along while watching it. And you know how I am about character pieces. You know, it didn't interest me that much. Now remember, he was in the episode 4 of Us Are Dying, season 1, episode 13. And remember, he was the face of the boxer in that one?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So this kind of reminds me of that. It's kind of a retread, I think. Kind of reminds me of that episode.
Yeah, his father blew him away in that one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then Leah's father blows him away in this one. So the guy can't get a break in either episode, unfortunately for him. But pretty much one thing that came to mind when watching this was the TV series from 2009-2010 called Dollhouse. Where people are improved, they're wiped out and replaced with different personalities and abilities to fit the purpose they're needed for. It was a Whedon series,
mm-hmm.
a couple series. A lot of people was kind of surprised that it was approved for a second, because the first one didn't do that well ratings-wise, but Fox went ahead and gave another year, and I think reason being is because, remember Firefly?
Yeah.
That, and that only, and it didn't barely last a season, and also they mixed the
episodes. That's right.
They didn't show them in order. So Fox probably felt bad about that, the executives, so they decided to give them another year. So they were 2 13-episode seasons. But I got my V emotion back up, so this should work. Here is a trailer from season 2, and it's 2 minutes long.
Fall asleep.
This isn't a nightmare.
What are they, babies, for?
I need you, Leo, please. Don't leave me. Caroline.
This is the shape of things to come.
I'm your girl, Leo.
You'll learn to trust me.
Hello, Echo. How are you feeling?
Did I fall asleep?
For a little while.
Shall I go now?
It all starts with Echo.
I remember everything.
She's not a blank slate anymore. She's a person.
I've been many people. I'm all of them. But none of them is me. Do you know who's real?
That word is dollhouse, where people have their memories erased and are brainwashed. There is nothing less than a conspiracy, spearheaded by the Rossum Corporation.
Rossum already has a plan.
Mr. Harding says anything in the name of progress.
Caroline.
I want to find her. I want to find all of them. Will you help me? I'm afraid of Caroline. If she comes back, where will I go?
The Rossum Corporation is the most powerful medical research company in the world.
They're manufacturing the president,
building an army.
It's a piece of a larger whole. If we do this, what does it make us?
That's torturing me!
What are we already?
We have the privilege of living inside the human heart, for which we give up everything. Caroline has power over people. Something bad is coming, and I want everyone to survive it. They need to wake up.
You work for Rossum, and that means your options tend to slim. Carry out Rossum's work without question. The attic, or death.
It was an okay series. I did a podcast on Dollhouse for the two seasons. A lot of the actors from different Whedon shows like Angel, Buffy. I mean, the actors are pretty good, especially the villain of the two seasons, Alpha, by Alec Tudyk. And he is a pretty good villain in that one. But, yeah, it's just exchanging different personalities to where you get to the point where the original person, is wiped clean, and then you insert whatever personality you want to fit whatever purpose they need to be used for. So they needed, say, for example, the government needed a bombing expert, you know, someone that can defuse bombs or someone like that. They would insert that persona in Echo or Sierra or Victor or any of the other dolls, and then they would perform the task. They would be that person, and they wouldn't know. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like this episode itself where, you know, he was able to go exchange different things for try to improve himself to he did improve himself, but it's still the same person inside.
Right.
Caroline's the same person. She wasn't totally erased. In the back there, I mean, her soul herself, you know, it's there, but it was muted. But very much the series reminded me of that. So my rating is a 1.5 out of 5, and I'll pass it over to Bobby. Bobby?
Oh, well, since there's nobody willing to perform a mercy killing on this series, season 5 just goes on and on and on and on and on. And the relentless procession of unpleasant, nasty, self-centered, mean-spirited, selfish characters so prevalent in season 5 continues unabated in this boring talk fest. It's all talk and little else. There are just too many idiotic scenes to be worth discussing, but a few do stand out. For one thing, the main character breaks his hand by punching out a door. But since when does a person with a broken hand end up overnight in a hospital bed while a doctor checks x-rays and prepares a cast? I know that was 50 years ago and medical care was different. But 40 years ago, I fell down a flight of steps and broke my ankle, and the doctor put a full leg cast on me from my toes up to my knee right in his office in about an hour and sent me home. I certainly didn't go to the hospital. So he looks ridiculous being in the hospital. And they've become so lazy in season 5 that they don't even bother to explain anything anymore. He's laying in that hospital bed and hits his hand again. And just like that, he develops this magical, mystical ability to buy everything he wants from everybody he knows. Unless I missed something, I didn't see any explanation as to why and how he developed that. It just was there. So they can't even bother to explain anything anymore. They just do it, and we're just supposed to accept it as being a fact. It makes no sense. And there are plenty of other nutty moments in this crazy story, but I wouldn't waste my breath talking about them. A couple of minutes ago, Robert mentioned, and in his written review, he also mentioned that he kept fast-forwarding to move it along. I had the opposite problem. I had to keep going back over and over to rewatch certain scenes because I kept dozing off. I watched 2 minutes of it, and I started to fall asleep again. So I've seen this thing far too many times, over and over and over and over and over again.
Bobby, you're just too dedicated for this show. That's all I can say.
Yeah, I am.
Brave, brave.
And Lynn mentioned a couple of minutes ago, and also in her written review, that Rod Serling had glasses in his hand instead of his cigarettes. And that's too bad, because even though they killed him, he should have stayed with the cigarettes. It appears that the nicotine gave him better judgment on what story ideas to greenlight for broadcast, because this one is a loser from beginning to end. It's just, it's, you know, how many stories have they done over almost 5 years of people who get what they want? And you know where it's going, because every character in every story that's ever been always gets what he wants and ends up paying for it at the end, whether it's with his life or his sanity or something. Nobody gets away with anything. So, you know, while it's playing out, you might not know he's going to get shot, but he's going to be in trouble eventually for doing what he's doing. So there's really no surprises there. There's really no surprises actually in any of it, to be honest with you. So it's just another season five story, that's all. And it's just, you know, it's more of the same. I come here every other week to find something to be enthusiastic about, and I can't find anything. And this is just another one, like has already been mentioned. It's just a throwback to an earlier story, and it's just the same old thing over again. I gave it a 1 rating in my written review, and I don't see any reason to change that except to ratchet it down to 0. But I'll keep it at 1. I didn't really get anything out of it. Anytime I'm watching it, as I did this earlier this week, and I can't keep my eyes open, I've got real problems with it. So if anybody, can anybody explain to me exactly how he developed this power that he has? Did I miss something?
No, you didn't miss anything. It just basically started with him meeting that woman, you know, and from there on, he didn't.
And how did he know in the hospital bed? How did he know in the hospital bed? He hits his hand again, and he seems to know immediately that he's got this power. He looks at his hand, and he rips off the bandages, and he says, fine.
No.
I saw nothing there to make him believe that things had changed. I mean,
it's when he goes over
story, something there, huh?
When he goes over to the other man, it's when he goes over to the other man and sees that he's got the damaged hands and he's got the cough. Then he puts two and two together.
Yeah, but he rips off his hand while he's still in bed.
You know,
he
bangs it.
He goes over there, he does it right away.
Yes, because
he
bangs it.
And he rips it off.
No. He bangs his hand. And it doesn't hurt. So he wants to look at his hand because it doesn't hurt. So he takes the bandages off.
I missed that. So it doesn't hurt. So that's why it's suspicious. Right.
Yeah. He bangs it against the table, but it doesn't hurt. He's waiting for the shooting of pain coming up his body, and it doesn't hurt.
Yeah, because remember, he was in pain when he got to the hospital, Bobby. And he noticed that when he was sleeping, he turned over, like Dave said, hit his hand on the table, and he noticed it didn't hurt. Then I guess that's when he thinks that, you know, he's got something.
Yeah well, that's making a big assumption. I would have just assumed that I got lucky and it didn't hurt my hand again.
But no, they don't say anything in the beginning that he's got this power. You're right.
But yeah, it's just there. Anyway, I gave it a 1 because I was feeling so terribly generous.
Did you want to add something?
No, wait, Bobby's finished.
Oh, okay.
Bobby is finished. I gave it a 1. Go ahead. You can take over.
Well, I enjoyed it. I don't know what you lot are talking about. I don't know why you bother watching it. I enjoyed it. First of all, I mean, right, let me go back to that point. First of all, yeah, I absolutely agree with Bobby that it was completely unusual that he would be overnight for the thing. But remember, presumably, he'd arrived at the hospital late at night. maybe, you know, I think they said the doctor wasn't available. It did seem plausible that they would keep him. But the point is that he didn't want to be in the hospital, which is part and parcel of why when he does in the morning knock his arm and it doesn't hurt, his immediate instinct to take up, because basically he doesn't want to be in the hospital anyway. He's got things to do. Probably one of which is return that car that he's borrowed. So there's that, and he doesn't put two and two together straight away until he notices he's got a little bit of this cough. Then he goes over and sees the other bloke who's got the bruising on his knuckles and the damaged hand, and the bloke, when he moves, yelps in pain. Now, that I think that if there is a flaw to the well, logic's too strong a word, but if there's a flaw at this point, what one would assume that you could argue that he didn't have this power. It was the other man that had the power, because if you remember, it's the other man who says deal. So in other words, you know, they talk about swapping. It's the older. So I made the assumption that the older man had the power, and I'm very surprised that I'm very surprised.
I didn't think of that.
Good. And I'm very surprised that Robert didn't mention a Buffy episode an Angel episode, not Buffy, where he goes into a hospital and an old man swaps bodies. He swaps body with Angel, and he goes out. He wears these bodies out. He lives in an old people's home, and he swaps bodies with them. But again, that was done in the 1990s, which takes me back to another thing that Bobby said. And, again, I'm not trying to disagree on purpose here, but this idea has been used lots and lots of times, and it's been used before in Twilight Zone. But remember, this was 50 years ago, so don't weigh this program, this storyline down with 50 years of copycat programs since it. It wasn't particularly a novel idea then, but it was certainly more novel and less a well-trodden path at the time.
Dave, can I ask you a question?
I
want an honest answer, and I'll give you my answer as well. Did you watch the series when it originally aired, when it came out in 59, 60?
I'm not sure whether I watched them in the late 60s. I don't know, it was about 5 or 6 years after they aired in America, but I watched them in the past, certainly. And when we got satellite here again in the UK, because obviously other than terrestrial channels got satellite, quite a few of the stations, so that was in the sort of 70s, around the 1980s mark, there were quite a lot of extra channels, and of course they imported on bulk these sort of what were then 20-year-old programs. So I probably more of them again in the 80s.
That's what weighs it down, because I've seen it in reruns. I mean, you know, I was born in 63. And when this episode aired, I was probably, about 5 months old, 6 months old, something like that. So I'm using my experience when I compare to Twilight Zone. And as I've always said, it's a root of what we have today. And I think that's the problem why it weighs things down, Dave, is just...
Well, I was in my 20s, probably in the mid-60s when I watched them.
If we seen it when it originally aired, we would probably have a different way of looking
at it. Yeah, but the point is to try and watched in those terms. I mean, you don't have to watch it, but that's the way I choose to do that. I mean, I'm not saying that this compares with... I mean, I've just watched a fantastic Doctor Who episode tonight, which I won't spoil for anybody, but, I mean, it's chalk and cheese in that sense. It's a very simplistic morality tale. And I do think that there's obviously been... You know, words are a lot easier to put on screen than scenes. But, I mean, for instance, this idea that, I mean, the bloke did the deal. The first deal went ahead because the bloke believed the lab was spouting nonsense, because basically to get him out of his apartment, he said, yeah, sure, $1 million. Throw him a flat, sure, because he thought this lab was spouting nonsense. And then we see him in his hotel as an old man. He gets talking to the bellboy, and then he hits upon this idea that, I'm assuming he realises that being that age in his 70s, is no joke. So it goes the softly, softly catchy monkey by a year at a time. I mean, $1,000 a year, it's only cost him $50,000 to get back what he got $1 million for, maybe a flat that was worth $250,000 as well. So you know, he was quitting in that sense. And of course, they had to take a shortcut because we had to assume. And the other thing is, I thought you might have mentioned, Robert, was Heroes, because in Heroes there was a lot of people had, and for Lynn and the others, that's where they had the different superpowers. But one of the superpowers, Styler, wasn't it? His mm-hmm. ability was to take other people's ability off them. And there's also a TV series in the UK. What's it called? It's about these down and outs doing community service. I forgot what the name of it is now.
The Misfits. Misfits.
Yeah. Misfits. Yeah. And one of those has the ability to take powers off people and sell powers, which, again, it's 50 years on, and they do it so much slicker, so much better. But
well, Dave, I'll impress you. Rogue from X-Men there.
Right. So, thank you. Good lad. So, but as I watch this, I mean, let's face it. I mean, it's only 23 minutes long. I mean, again, you know, watching it without the adverts, 23 minutes. I'm sure if it had dragged on for, if they tried to make this a 1 hour episode,
it would have dragged to mad.
Yeah. But I thought it was good. I take the point about the fact that this man, and I thought maybe Lynn might have made a little bit more about it, is the way this lad was pawing the girl at the beginning made him completely unsympathetic leading man, wasn't he? I mean, he was grabbing her. Yeah, I mean, the girl was basically, nowadays, she'd probably put a stiletto heel through his foot. you know, pepper spray him or something. I mean, he was very aggressive.
Obnoxious, yeah. He was absolutely obnoxious.
The way he grabbed her arm, yeah, definitely.
Now, the other point that I think Lynn was quite hung up on and about, and I can understand that, was, you know, this compassionate man, why would he sell him? Because he said that when the boy comes back to the house, they've not seen him for a while. You know, he's smarting himself up, this, that and the other, but he doesn't know how he got to that point. So when the boy tells him about this deal, he doesn't believe him for 1 minute. He thinks he's a wide boy, he thinks he's a charlatan, he's a con man. So, you know, he'll take his $100,000, and the reason why it backfires on him, literally backfires on him, is because although the young lad has compassion now, what he still has and never got rid of was his arrogance. His arrogance mm-hmm. to other people. And he was so arrogant, he never put himself in the shoes of the other people. He never thought the consequences to them. So he never thought the fact that he had this man's compassion, this man's attitude to him might change. He never made that logical step through there. So you can argue that watching it, you know, you're pretty certain how it's going to end. And to be frank, it was an end that the man deserved, because he was a chancer and so on. You could have ended it in a different way, but I think in a way justice was done. The thing I like that Robert said was that, you know, when he died, do you think all these people got their, you know, all the things jumped back into place, as it were, which mm-hmm. would be nice in a way, because, you know, the father could, you know, wake up in the chair with his compassion. The daughter plead, you know, he'd had a stroke, or the man had threatened him. She could point to those, you know, she'd been mauled on the street by him only a few days ago. Maybe witnesses had seen that. We'd had a couple of people walking past the road in the pavement when they were having the argument. She could have argued that a father shot him in self-defense, you know.
Yeah, that's the thing, you never find out.
So I think it was better. And again, the complication of her coming in the room screaming, it opened up a whole new story which didn't need to be told. The point was, this bloke chanced his arm. He was completely oblivious to all the trail and wake of devastation he left behind him. All he was interested in was pursuing the girl. I mean, he basically wanted her as a possession. He even admits it in that speech, which I thought was rather good. You know, he hadn't realised that he loved her. Basically, she was a trophy. And the more she didn't want him and rejected him, the more he was going to get her. So for a little morality tale, and I think Rick might probably be actually on my side of the coin on this one, maybe, and this one I don't know. I'm not saying it's a marvellous episode, but I quite enjoyed it. The bloke got his comeuppance, and it panned out reasonably well. So I'm going to give it, I might even give it 3.5. I was going to give it 3 out of 5. I think I'll give it 3.5 out of 5. I might even push to 4 if anybody says anything.
So what do you want to exchange for that for there, Dave?
Yeah, I'll swap you one of my points for one of your points. If you go up to 2, Robert, I'll come down to 3.
I got 1.5. I'll give you my 0.5. How's that for you?
All right. Well, I won't go to 4.
We're swapping.
I'll stick at 3.5. I won't go up to 4, and you have the extra half point.
Salvador Ross swapping points.
Bobby's a lost cause on this one, so I don't think he'll do a deal.
Oh, you guys are funny.
By the way, I just should say, Vaughan Taylor, Mr. Maitland, has been in 5 episodes of Twilight
Zone.
That's
right. That's
John
right.
John Gordon's been in 2, and Gail Comey, is it, been in 2. By the way, the old man in the chair playing the father, the actor's only 54 when this was filmed. Don Gordon playing Salvador Ross was 38. I couldn't believe him when he said to this bloke, "I'm only 26. I'll sell you some of my years." Oldest looking 26-year-old I've ever seen. And Gail was 31, just going up to 32. And I've seen them in lots of other stuff. I mean, Vaughan Taylor particularly, he's been a stalwart on television for years.
I like him.
So, very nice.
He played Henry Bemis's boss in Time Enough at Last. That was the first Twilight Zone episode he was in. He played Henry Bemis's boss.
Right. So, I think it was a little pleasant story. It was an allegory, and the bloke that he's come up and for something that you can watch in 23 minutes when you take the adverts out of it, it was okay.
Okay. So you give it what was your final rating?
we did some horse
trading. I know you were swapping.
Three and a half. I'm going to skip
three and a half for you. 3.5 for you. Okay. And Robert, what was yours?
I had 1.5 out of 5.
1.5. Yeah. And right. I gave it a 2, and Bobby gave it a 1. All right, so we're across the board. Poor Rick. Rick had some technical problems. His headphones broke down.
Mm.
And I emailed him during the last show, after the last show we did 2 weeks ago. And I said, we missed him. And he said he was having all kinds of problems and his headphones broke down. And he would try to be back as soon as possible. So hopefully we'll see him on the next show.
Let me ask you and Bobby, do you believe that maybe the old man had the power and he transferred it over to Salvador? Dave kind of congested.
That's the slightly weak. They didn't explain it, but that, I assume that it was the old man who did the deal. At first, when I watched it, because I'd forgotten the story, I was wondering whether it was going to be one of these pact with the devil type things. You know, the old man was basically there to the deal. But I'm assuming that but the other thing is when he did the transfer, he kept the power with all the successive ones. But that's what I thought, that the older man with the bad chest.
I'm not sure I believe that the old man had the power, because when he woke up and found out that his hand was broken, I mean, he was really upset. He said, "Oh my God, it's going to take forever. It'll never heal. It'll never heal."
Oh,
my
you're
head.
Right. It was surprising.
I don't think
he would have
done that to himself. Nah, why? For a guy he doesn't even know? Nah, I don't think so. I don't think so. I think it was some divine intervention somehow. I don't know. I don't know who would have intervened, though, because the guy was such a creep. So it's hard to believe that. I don't know. I don't know who did it, but somebody did it for him.
What about you, Bobby?
I don't care enough about it to even think about it.
Oh my.
Well, speaking of the next episode, that will be 2 weeks from now on October 25th. And I think it's one of the better season 5 offerings. Thank you, Dave. They've just put it into the what do we call this, Robert?
Chuck Client.
Yeah,
Jared Barkley looks just like you.
That's right.
Number 12 looks just like you.
Yes,
anyway.
They've just put it in here. Number 12 looks just yeah, okay, try it again. Number 12 looks just like you. And that is
I threw you off the Jared Barkley, didn't I?
Oh. Jared Barkley, right. With the wonderful Richard Long. And this, I think this will be Richard Long's second Twilight Zone episode.
It's his last two, isn't it? Isn't this the last one?
He was in where he woke up and nobody knew him. Oh my God.
Oh, so he's got one more. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I can't even remember the name of it now. That's terrible. But he woke up and nobody knew who he was. Nobody at work. He was
persons or persons unknown.
Persons unknown.
Is that it?
Persons unknown. Yes. Yes, yeah. That was the first one. This will be his second one. Yeah, and I think this will be one of the better season 5 offerings, and that will be 2 weeks from now on October 25th. Hopefully, Rick will be back with us then, and I hope to see everybody here then. So, that's it for today, and I hope everybody has a wonderful rest of the weekend, and I hope this rain stops. We need the rain to stop.
Hopefully.
Yeah,
it hadn't rained here since last night, so I guess that's a good thing.
Well, it's raining here, so it needs to stop. So, okay, guys. Well, I'll see you in 2 weeks for number 12 Looks Just Like You. Have a great rest of the weekend. Bye-bye.
Bye. And we'll go out with next week here. So, yep. See everybody next time.
Okay.
Rod Serling, the creator of Twilight Zone, will tell you about next week's story after this word from our alternate sponsor. And now, Mr. Serling.
On our next outing, Charles Beaumont comes through with another delightful flight of futuristic fantasy about a society of another time in which you literally can't tell the players without a scorecard. They all appear in an identical mold. Colin Wilcox, Richard Long, and special guest star Susie Parker appear in a program called Number 12 Looks Just Like You. I hope you're around to catch the similarity.
Rescue me.